The NBC Radio Network celebrates its first Fabulous 50.
Hi ho, everybody.
Good evening, Mr. First Lantern.
Good evening, Mr. Mr. North American. All the ships at sea, let's go to press.
The only thing we have to fear,
ladies and gentlemen, easy aces.
Mr. Allen! We are resolved to destroy Hitler.
Henry Aldrich!
Mr. Chairman.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito?
Everybody awake! Let the word go forth.
Ignition. Liftoff.
I have a dream.
Hello, Linda.
I'm mortified.
Flown like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Let me make one point clear.
Robert Zemeckis!
NBC Radio, America's first network, presents highlights from its first 50 years. 5 one-hour shows with hosts Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, Arlene Francis, John Chancellor, and Ben Grauer. With special material by Douglas Kiker. Brought to you in part by the premium wines of Ernest and Julio Gallo. By Alice Chalmers. The world needs more of what Alice Chalmers makes. And by Amana and your Amana retailers. Your host this hour, Bing Crosby.
When the blues of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
Back from a well-earned vacation, Bing AWOL Crosby.
AWOL.
I guess I'd better explain here. That was Crosby circa 1946 with my man Ken Carpenter on the old Kraft Music Hall. And I'm delighted to report back for duty to this anniversary get-together to guide you through some of those post-war years. I understand a chap named Bob Hope covered the war years for you last week. Well, at any rate, there's always been a fine crop of comedic talent on hand here at NBC, so why don't we sample some of that first?
I saw you out driving with that little blonde last night.
Oh, yes, Abbott. But I'm never going driving with her again. No. The minute I parked the car, she tried to start something.
What?
The car?
That was Abbott and Costello, of course. Then there was the show which began with, "Hello, Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat." Archie, the manager, speaking. No, Duffy ain't here. But Miss Duffy usually was.
Archie, did Larry Adler get here yet?
Now, wait, Miss Duffy. If you so much as pucker a toenail at Larry Adler...
Exactly what would you like me to do? Meet fellows on street corners?
What's wrong with that?
That sort of thing just doesn't work, and I know because I tried every corner in town.
you got to give Miss Duffy credit for trying. And while we're at it, how about a king-size portion of kudos for Bob Burns, who was such a joy on my show?
Well, to Bing, this little fish was sticking its little head right up out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of blowing bubbles and going boo-boo-boo-boo-boo at me. He said boo-boo-boo until I just had to take it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way back to camp, he just kept wagging his tail and saying boo-boo-boo-boo at me until there was only one thing left for me to do.
You brought him here.
No, I ate him for breakfast.
Well, I certainly should have put a stop to his boo-boo-boo-booing.
No, Sir Bing, it didn't.
He continued to boo-boo-boo?
Yes, sir, once before I ate him and twice after.
Hand him the bicarb. But enough of the mere morsels of comedy. Take away the hors d'oeuvre tray, please, and let's have a main course from a Burns and Allen show. The time that Jack Benny, he always played a penny pincher, invited George and Gracie to be his dinner guests at the Brown Derby.
A waiter, we're ready to order.
Yes, sir. Would Madame like to start with a cocktail?
No, thanks. I never drink.
I meant a shrimp cocktail.
No matter how small it is, I never drink.
Mrs. Burns will have a steak, and I'll have a broiled lobster.
Well, they're both very good here, but as long as you're in the Brown Derby, you really should order the specialty of the house. You see, crackers and milk.
Oh, I've changed my mind. I won't have a steak.
Good, good.
I'll have lamb chops.
sure Madame will enjoy the lamb chops. We serve them with little paper panties on.
Well, don't your legs get cold?
That was a delicious meal, Gracie. Excuse me, gentlemen, here's your check. That'll be $10.30.
Well, somebody say something. It will be $10.30.
You shut up! Look, George, if you want the check, I won't fight you.
I don't want the check.
Well, George, let's not make a scene. Go ahead and pay the check.
All right, but I just want to say this. Jack, if you let me pay this check, you're a low, miserable, tight-fisted, conniving miser. And I'll never speak to you again as long as I live. Well...
Now, Mr. Burns, if you've finished, I have a few words to say.
What are they?
Here's the check.
That was a virtuoso performance. And very tough to follow, too, so maybe we better not cry. Well, at least not immediately.
Bing Crosby and the First Fabulous 50 will continue after this. NBC Radio continues its anniversary celebration. Here's your host, Bing Crosby.
A little earlier, we heard some of the marvelous comedy that was available on NBC in the mid-40s. But life wasn't all chuckles just because World War II was over. We've asked Douglas Kiker, NBC News, to describe one of the dark clouds on the horizon. Doug?
Bing, one particular cloud that appeared then has been hovering over us ever since. Despite the fact that the United Nations had been established with world peace as its major goal, a new kind of war was beginning. We heard Winston Churchill in a speech at Fulton, Missouri, describe the dividing line between the two contending forces.
From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent.
The Cold War had begun. We joined with our allies in Europe to form NATO, while here at home, the attack was renewed against the domestic variety of communists. One aspect of it had begun back in 1940. Here's how Walter Winchell announced it that year.
Flash! Washington, attention, Hollywood! The committee investigating subversive activities, the DIES Group, will shortly name 30 prominent Hollywood actors and others as being heavy contributors to the Communist Party.
Then in 1947, Hollywood again became the target of a congressional investigating committee. Writers, directors, and actors were subpoenaed. Some testified, others refused. There were those who did admit some involvement, among them the late John Garfield, noted for his tough guy roles in films.
I attended a number of these meetings where the Comrade Chairman guys would make speeches. And these guys confused me. They gave me headaches. So I left.
You stated that Lionel Stander was the one who introduced you into the Communist Party.
He's the guy that said to me, get to know this stuff and make out more with the names.
That kind of Marxism sounded more like Groucho than Karl, but the hearings were no laughing matter. A number of witnesses refused to testify at all on constitutional grounds. Dubbed by the press as the Hollywood Ten, they were held in contempt of Congress. Some went to prison. All were blacklisted by their industry. And the search for communists moved into the State Department.
My name is Alger Hiss. I am not and never have been a member of the Communist Party.
But in 1950, after a trial involving classified government documents, Mr. Hiss was convicted of perjury, mainly on the testimony of the late Whittaker Chambers, and was sent to prison. To this day, he still maintains his innocence. And so individuals, as well as nations, fell under the clouds cast by the Cold War, and there was more to come, which I know you'll be getting to later on, Bing.
Thank you, Doug. Douglas Kiker, NBC News. Well, in and around all these grimmer goings-on, life was the usual mixture of the sublime and the ridiculous. Then I'm going to let you listeners decide which adjective applied to what took place one night on this particular NBC show.
Hello there. We've been waiting for you. It's time to play Truth or Consequences.
That night, host Ralph Edwards asked one of the contestants to imitate a seal calling to its mate.
Well, what do you know? Here comes a real live seal on the stage.
Then he had to sing a duet with the lady.
Let me call you sweetheart.
You see now how Dean Martin got his start. Of course, I jest. But there was a much easier way to pick up some prize money on the NBC radio.
Oh, Horace! Horace! Yes. Horace, we got him! Hello? Is this J.M. Vespris, 925 Inwood Terrace, South Jacksonville, Florida, number 57580J? It is? Well, this is Ben Grauer calling from the Pot of Gold program. We are sending $1,000 by Western Union immediately to J.M. Vespris. B-E-S-P-R-I-S.
Well, sitting home and listening to giveaway programs like this became so popular that when other networks followed suit, an NBC entertainment program decided to offer insurance.
If you, any listener in the continental United States, answer a telephone call made by any giveaway radio program during the next 30 minutes, and because you are listening to Fred Allen, you miss an opportunity to win an article of merchandise or a cash prize, National Surety Corporation guarantees that Fred Allen will perform his agreement to replace the merchandise or reimburse you for any amount of prize money you have lost, up to $5,000.
And that didn't sit too well with Fred and one of his guests.
People don't want entertainment today. A radio show has to give away things. Nylons, iceboxes, automobiles.
You mean to stay on the air, you have to give things away? Free?
Yes. I'll die first.
The way Jack gave away those lines, he could leave the giving away of everything else to other NBC programs like Will Double or Nothing, or Take It or Leave It, or Dr. IQ, on whose program one of the assistants assigned to pick contestants out of the audience would call out, "Doctor, I've got a lady in the balcony." Well, I got a man in the wings.
Bing Crosby will be back with more of the First Fabulous 50 shortly. The First Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, your host, Bing Crosby.
Through the years here at NBC, music of superior quality and copious quantity has always been readily available. In 1950, this Academy Award song.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you.
Yes, the late, great Nat King Cole. And I had the pleasure of playing host to him on the Old Craft Music Hall in what you might call his pre-Renaissance period. That's when he played some of the most swinging piano of any era.
Nat, I'm an old trio man myself. Possibly you've heard of our trio, the old rhythm boys. The highly hip, stuff like when the sun goes down, the tide goes out.
Hillbilly stuff, huh?
Billy King, we were a smash in Rochester with Georgia Brown.
No kidding.
Just took four bows on hissing alone. I'll never forget.
Well, George has changed a lot since then.
Georgia Brown has?
Yes, he has. Yes, you wouldn't know her now. To have to tear ourselves away, but we must defer to the ladies, you know, and in this case, the senorita from Brazil, who sported a chapeau which looked like a bowl of fresh fruit, Carmen Miranda. My great lyrics there.
Lately I seem to walk as though I had wings.
Now from the center of the supper club floor, Perry Como directs his song to those in love, wherever they may be.
One in love. Each time I look at you, I'm limp as a glove and feeling like someone.
You'd understand why Perry never had to go back to cutting hair for a living. Molto bene, Perry. Music was big at NBC, but in 1951, nothing was bigger than The Big Show, a weekly 90-minute comedy variety extravaganza with the husky-voiced Tallulah Bankhead in charge, hurling her devastating darlings at a star-studded lineup of guests who took turns identifying themselves at the top of the show.
Carson Jack. Born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Favorite actor, Jack Carson. Favorite leading lady, Dennis Morgan.
Isn't he a doll? Spelled D-U-L-L.
Russell, Rosalind. Born Waterbury, Connecticut. Luck has followed me ever since my school days at Barnard, where I studied metaphysics, theology, and journalism. And tonight I find myself on The Big Show. Oh, well, my luck had to turn sometime.
But what can you expect from a girl who was educated in a barnyard?
Silver's Phil. Real name, Jessica Dragonette. Changed it to Phil Silvers because I already had a brother named Jessica Dragonette. Born Brooklyn, New York. Happy that I have at last become associated with one of the greatest names in the theater.
Darling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, only Tallulah could stop fast-talking Phil Silvers in mid-sentence. And she's going to help me stop our first fabulous 50 celebration with a bit she did 25 years ago.
Now, darling, I want to take just a moment to ring my silver anniversary chimes.
Three chimes of silver.
This is NBC. The National Broadcasting Company.
The NBC Radio Network continues celebrating its first Fabulous 50. Brought to you in part by Delta, the airline run by professionals. Delta is ready when you are. By Wrigley's Freedent Gum. By your neighborhood McDonald's restaurant. At McDonald's, we do it all for you. And by True Value Hardware Stores. Not just a name. It's our way of doing business. And here, once again, Bing Crosby.
Anniversaries and birthdays call for toasts. So if you'll raise your glasses, put something in it, of course, first, join in the toast that lovable old Victor Moore addressed to equally lovable Jimmy Durante on an NBC show many years ago.
I heard that yesterday was your birthday. Well, I just want to wish you many, many happy returns of the day.
Thanks, Victor. That touches me deeply.
I'm not one for making speeches, Jim. But as you slide down the banister of life, may the splinters never be pointed the wrong way.
That touches me deeply, too. Well, splinters facing the wrong way with a lot of the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1951.
Batter up!
Hey, Paul!
That was the theme of the regular show that Jackie Robinson did for NBC in those days. And after the New York Giants edged the Dodgers out of the National League title in the last inning of the third playoff game, that's right, the Bobby Thompson home run, which you undoubtedly heard about countless times, Jackie told his radio audience what his reaction was.
I went in the clubhouse after the game and congratulated Leo because I know that he's done a wonderful job. And, well, the whole club has. All we can say over there in Brooklyn now is to wait until next year.
That's a true sportsman, Jackie Robinson. And I know how he must have felt about that wait till next year business. My Pittsburgh Pirates, well, never mind. Press on. There was no wait until next year for Richard Nixon in 1952. When as Republican vice presidential candidate, he had to explain his finances in a speech broadcast to the nation. These were the closing words as we heard them on NBC.
A man down in Texas heard Pat in the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, the day before we left on this campaign trip, we got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers.
The speech was good enough to save him his place on the ticket headed by General Dwight Eisenhower, who was making speeches of his own that fall concerning the major problem facing our country, a war. Ike made this campaign promise.
I shall go to Korea.
It wasn't officially labeled a war, but a United Nations police action which started back in June 1950 and ground right on through the elections of 1952 into 1953. President Truman commented,
"The battlefield situation is uncertain at this time. We may suffer reverses as we have suffered them before, but the forces of the United Nations have no intention of abandoning their mission in Korea."
I'm a lonely soldier, a sitting in Korea. I'm a lonely soldier, sitting in Korea.
They called it the war the songwriters forgot, so the GIs made up their own songs. But NBC News didn't forget. They did a super one-hour radio documentary about it. We can only give you a small fragment of it now, of course. So we've left out the voices of the generals and the politicians and just strung together the sounds of war and the soldiers who fought it and the correspondents who reported it.
Here's a GI digging his foxhole. Well, you got a nice deep one here.
Yeah, it takes a deep one.
Everything coated with dust. I'm sweating straight mud.
Peace, firing! If those are Army troops, what the hell are they doing shooting at us?
We just came up the bank on the Seoul side of the river. Well, if this is Seoul, God be with us.
I've seen an awful lot of sailors and an awful lot of officers. But this bunch of boys are manning these little wooden ships. They're Iron Man. This is the Iron Man wooden ship Navy. It really is.
I got hit and I crawled into the bushes and fired from there. About 2:30, 3 o'clock, the guys come up and I just started to cry. I was so damn happy.
If you want some gorillas, go right across the strip here. They got them unloading the aircraft, I think.
Our aircraft, huh?
Yeah.
Any news on the war will soon be over.
What do you call it, Snake? You were up in the lines.
Oh,
well, I don't think it's
y'all know more than we do. All we is up there fighting like everything.
The one thing, I want to go home.
Now.
Either start it all out or just move on out of here.
I'm a lonely soldier sitting in Korea.
Either start it all out or move on out of here. But we did neither. President-elect Eisenhower had kept his promise, and he went to Korea in late November 1952. And finally, in July of 1953, an armistice was signed. But 23 years later, we've still got GIs in Korea. They still may be singing this song.
And them rotation papers sure is hard to get.
The first Fabulous 50 will continue right after this. Here's Bing Crosby again with more of NBC's first Fabulous 50.
Well, now, if I may be allowed to dip into our grab bag of solid gold cliches, I can come up with a 24-carat winner. The good old days. That's an absolute verity when applied to NBC Radio. We did have jolly times then, especially when we could get a friendly feud going. Like the one between these two would-be Arnold Palmers.
You really heat up and smolder when you drop a few Morgenthau mash notes at golf, don't you, huh?
You just had beginner's luck.
Beginner's luck? Yes. You just began once too often, brother.
You had the wind at your back.
We were both playing in the same direction. The wind was at your back, too.
Oh, yeah, but look at the sail you've got.
Do you want to compare physiques, flesh and fantasy?
Next to you, I shape up like John Hall, or shall we say one of those South Sea Islanders.
Yeah, and you could cook a missionary in that pot you carry.
About a pot calling a pot a pot. Oh, well, I forgave him. He was playing under a terrible handicap. His game. But not so forgiving were those who tangled with that chip off Edgar Bergen's block, Charlie McCarthy. John Barrymore, the eminent thespian, was one.
Mr. Barrymore, are you interested in the theater?
Tempora, no mores. To think that I have come to this, alas and alack, by bandy words with an overgrown stump.
And there was this classic confrontation.
Hello, Mr. Fields.
Hello, blood poison. You know, Charlie really loves you, Mr. Fields.
Yes, I do. But I don't think Mr. Fields loves me.
Now, listen, that's gone far enough. He's not going to tell me I don't love him. I'll break every knot in his body.
Such exquisite tenderness. But when you look for the epitome of radio feuds, the one between Fred Allen and Jack Benny had the most explosive climax. On one of Fred's programs, Jack was playing the role of a contest winner, Myron Proudfoot.
Mr. Myron Proudfoot is king for a day. Well, Your Majesty, how do you feel?
Never mind how I feel. What do I get? Well, first, your suit is a little baggy, King. Boys, take His Majesty's coat off.
Wait, wait.
On our stage, we have a Hoffman pressing machine.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
An expert operating the Hoffman pressing machine will press your trousers.
Now, wait a minute. You better keep my shirt on.
We're a little late, folks. Tune in
now,
again.
Come on, Alan. Give me my pants.
Quiet, King.
Alan, listen to me. Where are my pants?
Jenny, for 15 years I've been waiting to catch you like
Alan,
this.
Alan, you haven't seen the end of me.
It won't be long now.
I want my pants.
Did you get the impression that the audience enjoyed that? Well, I think they did, too. But it wasn't all high-pitched humor and hysterical laughter on NBC Radio in those days. There was also the low-key cops and robbers drama, pioneered by this program.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
That's right, Dragnet. Just the facts, ma'am. That's what Jack Webb, the leading character and creator of the show, was after.
It was Saturday, July 21st. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday.
Hi, Joe. You ready?
Let's go.
And by the time the half-hour program was over, the criminals had been brought to justice and punishment had been meted out. In addition to Dragnet, there was Gangbusters and High Adventure, Dangerous Assignment, many other high-tension programs. And to add a soupçon of suspense to our proceedings, tell me, did the initials A.T. and the phrase musical genius strike a familiar chord? They do? Well, here's where the suspense comes in.
NBC Radio's 50th anniversary celebration continues
And here's your host, Bing Crosby.
When I mentioned the initials A.T. a few minutes ago, I was referring, of course, to the musical genius, Arturo Toscanini, who had a unique relationship with NBC Radio. We've put together sort of a miniature biography and sound of the great conductor. And Ben Grauer, who was closely associated with the maestro's performances, narrates it.
On June 25th, 1886, in Rio de Janeiro, the conductor of a touring opera company from Italy was taken ill just before a performance. A 19-year-old cellist of the orchestra was persuaded to take over. He conducted the entire opera superbly and from memory. From that moment on, the name of Arturo Toscanini became one of the most famous in the history of music, as triumph followed triumph for half a century. Then, in 1936, he resigned from the New York Philharmonic, which he had conducted for 11 years, to return to his native Italy and retire. But the perseverance of one man, David Sarnoff, brought him back.
I was assured by the maestro's friends that he never changed his mind about anything, and that he had vowed never to return. But Maestro Toscanini, lured by our offer of creating a great orchestra for him alone and for radio alone, returned to America and presided over the newly formed NBC Symphony for 17 seasons.
I had the memorable experience of being musical commentator for most of the maestro's performances. They were broadcast from Studio 8H in Radio City, and when that wasn't big enough for the thousands who wanted to attend, Carnegie Hall. But naturally, at rehearsals, very few were present. Very often, the maestro's famous temper would blow sky high.
Non posso mai, I cannot hear, never.
I am sorry, I don't enjoy. You look at me, you believe that I am crazy? No. A sensitive, yes. Da capo.
Da capo, from the top. And on they went. But the musicians, terrorized or not, really loved the man. I remember they chipped in and bought an expensive gold watch for one of his birthdays, which they presented just before rehearsal. Then they went into the rehearsal, which didn't go well at all. Maestro lost his temper, threw the watch to the floor, and stomped it to pieces. The next day, the musicians chipped in again, bought him a $1 Ingersoll watch, which he loved, and wore from then on. Toscanini and the NBC Symphony toured the country one year, and he provided a rousing encore in Richmond, Virginia in 1950 that the folks down there have never forgotten. Piercing dark eyes, his fierce mustache, that explosion of white hair. But most of all, he was a superb musical genius, raising the art of conducting to new heights. And then on April 4th, 1954, in Carnegie Hall, the last concert. The final work, the prelude from Wagner's Die Meistersinger. There in the control room, like everyone else, filled with emotion, growing almost unbearably tense as the end of a fabulous career approached. As the last chord sounded, the baton dropped from the maestro's hand. Arturo Toscanini turned, walked off the stage, and into musical immortality.
That was Ben Grauer, sharing some very moving moments with us. Thank you, Ben.
Bing Crosby and the First Fabulous 50 will continue after this.
The first...
NBC Radio continues its anniversary celebration. Once again, here's your host, Bing Crosby.
Of course, on a program like the First Fabulous 50, you're constantly asking yourself, yeah, we're leaving so-and-so out, and why can't we get this or that in? Well, the answer's obvious, so let's get on with it, or we'll be leaving out even more. Say, would you run on that short fellow with the crew cut, please?
There was an ad in the paper just last week. It was a company seeking fresh capital, and it was a one of those typical small manufacturing companies, and it was called the Typical Small Manufacturing Company. And they manufacture typical smalls.
Getting his typical large less is George Grobel. In the No Laughing Matter department in 1954, there was Senator Joseph R. McCarthy of Wisconsin, who brought the era of the so-called communist witch hunt to a climax when he insisted there was massive communist infiltration of our government and army.
In 1917 or 18, I forget which it was, the Kaiser sent 7 devoted communists into Russia. And within 100 days, those 7 men had taken over and enslaved a nation of 180 million people. 7 people. Well, now we've got 25,000. So it's a very imminent, urgent, day-to-day danger.
In what became known as the Army-McCarthy hearings, which were broadcast in their entirety for 3 months, McCarthy got into bitter wrangles with some of his fellow senators and with the Secretary of the Army and others. But possibly the most damaging confrontation for him was the elderly Boston lawyer representing the Army, Joseph Welch, who felt that a young associate of his had been unnecessarily smeared by the senator.
Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts you, Mr. Welch.
I'll say it hurts.
May I say, Mr. Chairman, as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to finish this.
Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir.
Well, Mr. Welch was right. It did hurt him. Later that year, a vote of censure by his colleagues in the Senate ended his influence and his importance, leaving as his main claim to fame, well, if you can call it that, the term McCarthyism. Well, turning from acrimony to harmony, I remember an NBC show when Mary Martin and a friend, well, we managed a pretty close blend.
What a wonderful wedding there will be. What a wonderful day for you and me. Church bells will chime.
You will be mine.
Very same program, I believe, Bert Lahr achieved a musical pinnacle that has never been equaled.
Yes.
I love life, and I want to live, and drink of life's fullest, and of all it can give. I love life, I want to live.
Oh, Crosby, you're a bum.
I
think it's just as well that we've reached the end of this hour because, well, after that, there's nowhere to go but home. It's fantastic. Well, Well, just one thing before we close up shop. I'd like you to know that you're going to be in the very best of hands when our anniversary show comes on at you again next week. An elegant pair of hands belonging to a charming lady who began her career on NBC Radio on the What's My Name show. Listen and see if you can guess her name.
I'm addicted to caviar, radio, and being called charming by the master of charm himself, Bing Crosby.
Kind of you to say so, dear lady. And if any further hint is needed, her initials are Arlene Francis. So you be sure to tune in next week, huh? That's what I'm going to do. It's Bing Crosby saying goodnight.